I feel like such a princess. This is my story of love and forgiveness. But first, I'd like to ask you a question. The first time you saw me, don't say it out loud. The first time you saw me in my scooter, what did you think? Well, I've heard it all, or I've been subject to it all. And it seems like a lot of people think that because you're in a wheelchair, you're somehow intellectually challenged or slow. I always wonder, why don't they think we're smart? But the most, the other thing is that they also sometimes think that you're hard of hearing. So they get right in your face and speak up. But usually neither one is true. I'm wondering, has anybody in here been kicked out of Walmart? Well, I guess I'm the only one. I was, on this occasion, it was around December, Christmas time, and I had just bought a fake fur from Burlington, and I was going to this fancy meeting, so I wore my coat. And on the way back, I was passing Walmart, and I thought, I need to stop in here and get something. So I went in, and I was looking at the apples. And this lady came over to me and she said, can I help you? I said, no, not really. I'm just looking at the apples. She said, well, I'm security. And I think you're at risk. And I said, why? And she said, well, you look like $1 million. She said, you're wearing a fur coat. I said, but it's fake. She said, who knows? And she said, and you're wearing diamonds. That was my wedding ring. And you have a keychain that says Hawaii. So that means you're rich. You've been to Hawaii. I said, and she said, and that cane you have on the back of your scooter, which I had at the time, somebody's going to grab that and hit you over the head and steal your purse. And she said, where is your purse? I said, it was on the floor of my scooter and the coat was draped around it. I did that deliberately so it wasn't in sight. And she said, I'm just going to have to ask you to leave because I'm responsible for your for your safety. And I said, well, nobody's ever hit me over the head with the cane and I don't think that's going to happen, but if you insist, I'll go. So I left, and she walked me straight to my car and waited until I got in and took off. So that was quite an experience. Another time, I was at a conference in a hotel, and as I went into the ladies' room, the restroom lady was there. Us women know who the restroom lady is. Well, as I was leaving, the restroom lady said, it's really a shame. I said, what's a shame? She said, you're so beautiful, but you're in that chair. And I said, well, maybe I wouldn't be so beautiful if I wasn't in this chair, and left. A few years ago, Unity Renaissance had a fair outside. I don't know if some of you might remember that, where people showed their wares, what their crafts and that sort of thing. And so I was talking to one of the exhibitors, and this lady came up to the table where I was, and she said to me, why are you in that chair? Why aren't you healed? You are a Unity person, aren't you? And the exhibitor said, she is healed. She accepted this assignment to teach us. And the woman huffed away. And I was still pondering, am I healed? Is this it? God, this is not what I had in mind. I had polio at age 4 when there was a polio epidemic in Monroe, North Carolina. Well, actually all over North Carolina and Virginia. And the hospitals were running over with children with polio. Parents were really scared because polio is contagious. Pools and movies and other gathering places were closed. And my dad sent my mom and I and my 2 brothers to my grandmother's house out in the country because he thought we would be safe there. Well, the next morning when I got up, I fell to the floor. I had already contracted the polio virus without them knowing. That was my first sign. Because all the hospitals were full, they opened an old army barracks called Camp Sutton in North Carolina and used it as a hospital and rehab. I spent a year there. My parents were only allowed to visit one afternoon a week on Sunday afternoon. I don't think that would happen today. And also, my brothers were not allowed to visit at all. So my dad would hold them up outside at the window so I could wave to them and they could wave to me. And the doctors told my parents that I would never walk again. That's me in the hospital with my physical therapist. They wore dresses back then. And I loved her. She was a great woman. Now the next picture is of me in the first grade. I think my mom curled my hair. I did walk out of the hospital, and I continued to walk. I continued through college, through graduate school, and went to Tulane University to get my master's in social work. And I went on to have various jobs and worked my way up the career ladder. And I planned my jobs, I planned my career precisely to have the end goal of the job of my dreams. So I would even take a job that offered less money if it gave me some skills that I didn't have already. So you may wonder why, if I walked out of the hospital, I'm in the chair now. Well, there's such a thing as post-polio syndrome. And what that means is that when the polio virus attacks you, it attacks the horn cells in your spine and kills off some of those. And so the others take over for that, which allowed me to walk. But then after a while, after many years, I was in my 40s, your body, those muscles start wearing out. They can no longer take over the task. So I was seeing a post-polio specialist in Richmond, and she said, Faye, this was probably in my 50s when I went from, when I threw away my crutches when I went to college, I started with what's called an IFO or AFO. I forgot what it was, what it's called. Not an AFO. But anyway, it's called an ankle-foot orthotic. And so I went from that to using that and a cane, and then went from that to a brace and the crutches and the whole scenario all over again until I wound up here, because my doctor had told me, she said, Faye, if you don't quit your job, which I was in my dream job by then, and I was the president and CEO of Center for Child and Family Service in Hampton, and she said, if you don't quit your job and you don't get a scooter, then you're going to be dependent for the rest of your life. Well, that really scared me, so I did what she told me to. I wish I had not gotten in the scooter as soon as I did, but that's the past. So I was talking earlier about teaching. And before I say that, I forgot one of the most important things, and that was my husband. I met my husband in New Orleans, and he was my biggest cheerleader. He was supportive. He always had my back, and he believed in me when I didn't even believe in myself. Unfortunately, he made his transition in 2007, but he was a very important part of my life. I was talking earlier about teaching, and I think one of my things that I've taken on is to teach people about how to interact with handicapped folks. And you know, we're all handicapped in some degree. Some are more visible than others. I would suggest that if you're around someone who may look a little different, that you pay attention. Look at what their needs might be and offer assistance. But don't just jump in and do it for the person. Ask their permission first. Because unless you're friends, you need to ask permission. Like, I have friends here who know what my needs are. I have friends who get me coffee, open the door, and any other numerous things, too numerous to mention. But I'm very blessed by that. Now, there are some militant handicapped people. They would rather hurt themselves and struggle than to allow someone to help them. But I just think that they have to travel their own journey. As I told you earlier, this is a story of love and forgiveness. And I believe that truly love a person, you have to forgive, because things happen every day. Considering that I had polio since I was 4 years old, I've had many opportunities to forgive. I'm sorry to say I don't always do that. Sometimes I stay angry rather than forgiving. For instance, I was going into an office building that had 10-foot-high heavy glass doors. And they not only were they heavy, there were two sets of them, double glass doors. And I was really struggling. And when I went through the second set, I saw this young couple sitting on a bench inside. And the guy said, "Wow, you did great opening those doors." Well, rather than take the opportunity to educate these young people, I just wanted to slap him. I don't know that I've ever slapped anyone, but fortunately, I have mellowed since then, so you're not in any danger. Unless you run in front of my scooter, I'm liable to run into you. You know, we have opportunities every day to forgive and love, opportunities both big and strong. A few years ago, I was hurt very badly by a friend. Every day I thought about it. I woke up thinking about it. I went to sleep thinking about it. I thought about it all day. Emmett Fox says that when we are unforgiving, that person has a hook in us, leading us around, because they're in control of our life. We aren't free to do what we want to do. And we're not free until we forgive. That doesn't mean that we condone their behavior and we don't have to invite them to dinner. But we are free to see the Christ in them. Divine wisdom guides us to let go of bitterness and blame and step into the light of a new day. That happened for me beginning my journey into forgiveness. Happened at a Christmas Eve service here at Unity. If none of you have ever been to the Unity Christmas service, it's a very powerful experience. And I think those of you who have been here know that. Well, I cried during that whole service. And I really felt like I was being washed clean. And I was losing a lot of those unforgiveness feelings, those bitterness feelings. But I tell you, the forgiveness journey was a struggle. And it's something that I had to work on every day. And I committed myself to renew my journey of prayer and meditation. And I did that every day, listening for that still small voice that Devotion was talking about in the song. And over time, it happened. Have you heard, fake it till you make it? Well, I was doing a lot of that too, because that's practice for you. And no matter how a person presents themselves, they want to be loved, just like you want to be loved. And we can only love if we're able to forgive. And loving feels so good. It makes you feel like a million bucks. Thank you.
Let's take some time now for meditation. I invite you to close your eyes. Let's just breathe in deeply. And then release and let go. Allow yourself to settle into your seat and to relax from the top of your head all the way down to the tips of your toes. And just breathe. In the sacred moment, we take a moment just to let our hearts open to the sacred, to the divine, and to love. As we tune into our heart space, let go of all that is on the outside and turn within. We find love. We find that still small voice. We find the presence of God. Take a moment to breathe into that knowing, into the safety of that energy surrounding us and folding us. And remember that each of us is a gift. We say in our own hearts, I am a gift. I am a gift. Let it sink in deeply. Surround yourself with love and appreciation for your own journey. And open to Spirit speaking to you, saying exactly what you most need to hear in this moment, in the silence. Thank you, sweet Spirit, for the grandness of this life adventure that we're living, for the way showers on our path, for those who share their wisdom from the heart, like our beloved Faye. We feel so blessed, so very blessed. Thank you, infinite presence, the energy of all life. We are grateful, and so it is.